Hello, Salt Lake City Dunk listeners. You are welcome to another version of the Andy and Clark podcast extravaganza. I'm going to have to excuse Andy tonight. He wasn't able to make it. I think he's attending to bigger matters. But I will continue on with the podcast for this evening. With us tonight, we're going to speak with Peter J. Novak, a Salt Lake's Utah Jazz fan that also has some financial knowledge and we like to talk about the financial aspects and trade aspects of the NBA. So I've invited him on to do that. We're going to talk a little bit about the off-season financial outlook of some teams in the NBA and what that might mean for the Jazz moving forward. So how are you doing tonight, Peter?
I am doing super, and I'd just like to say I'm not trying to replace Andy. I'm just a placeholder for this evening, so let's go. But I think we have a lot to talk about. We did some articles on some financial situations of each of the teams back around the trade deadline, and we took a pause on analyzing that too far so we could watch the season play out and enjoy the playoff contention. But now that's passed in the offseason here, I'm excited to look at some of the things we got going forward for the Jazz.
Yeah, I think what ended up prompting conversations that Peter and I were having over Twitter and email was that we throw around the term financial flexibility a lot in Jazz land, and we kind of were wondering, is that really a super valuable thing? How valuable is that? What might that mean for the Jazz moving forward? And so we started looking at the financial outlook of a bunch of teams. Wrote some posts maybe 2 months ago on the look, and we're just going to talk about a little bit what we found. So what were some things that jumped out to you when you looked at the financial future of the NBA and of specific teams, Peter? Anything that comes to mind off the bat?
Well, I think the quote that was beaten down into my head, and I think the Jazz PR must put together a version of their Benghazi talking points, because you hear all the front office personnel go on the radio and they have their things that they repeat. And one of the things that I kept hearing repeated was that, the Jazz have, financial flexibility that's not matched in the league, and that, there's going to be, 10 or 12 or whatever teams that are in a terrible financial situation, and that they're just going to be looking to offload talent this summer, which put the Jazz in a unique situation. So, hearing all those things, I got at least the spark in my head to say, I want to see what everyone's going to do this summer. I want to see, what people's cap situation looks like. I want to analyze that. And, to do that, we had to go into each team. You got to look at what contracts they have expiring, which guys they likely plan on trying to bring back, and a lot of things. But we spent a good amount of time breaking these down. I think we came up with some numbers that I feel very comfortable with, and I don't know what you felt about the situation, but I don't feel like there's as much of a we're not the only team with financial flexibility, I guess, was my results on that take.
Okay, well, let's say, would it be fair to say that the Jazz are going to have the most financial flexibility this summer, in your opinion?
I think we've had this conversation before too. Is is there such a thing as or is there a benefit to saying you have the most if you only have a million or 2 million more than the teams that second or third, and at some point does your financial flexibility kind of cease to be a benefit, and there's just no incremental value to having additional money. I think the results we found were that I think from the numbers I'm looking at now, I think Atlanta actually was going to have more financial flexibility. I think the number I'm looking at right now, their cap room was about $1 million more than the Jazz, who were second. But, there's also Cleveland and there's also Detroit, who we also anticipated to have, over $20 million in salary cap space. That's before they do anything exotic like amnestying a player or, maybe apply the stretch provision of the CBA, which no one's really talking about right now.
I do want to talk about that, so remind me to ask you. I'm really excited for those that don't know, the stretch provision was put in the new CBA for any new contract that was signed basically after the new CBA went to effect. Basically, it gives you an opportunity to make a bad contract less bad against your cap by stretching it out over more years and making the cap hit less than the actual amount of money. I'm really excited for the first time that gets used. I think there will be like a little footnote in history, you know, whoever's contract was the first to be stretched, because obviously it's going to be used on bad contracts, and so infamously, it's going to be interesting to see who's kind of the most infamous starting contract. Are there any people you have your eye on to take that mantle?
You know, and you say it might be a bad contract. I'm actually not convinced. And just to explain the stretch provision, what it allows you to do or allows a team to do is if a player has 2 years left on their contract, you know, at $10 million each season for a total of $20 million, what they can do is they can spread the cap hit by doubling the number of years left and adding one. So if there's 2 years left, they can double it to 4 years, and then you add one, so 5 years. So if you had $20 million left on that contract, you can take a $4 million per year cap hit as opposed to holding up $10 million per year. So I think there's actually a lot of benefit from that. And I think, you know, the waivers for the stretch waivers that they'll do, we actually might see it with small contracts first, where, you know, maybe a guy has 1 year, $5 million left, you know, and the team wants to clear up a little bit of money, or, you know, if they're up against the luxury tax line, they want to get below that, you know, they could stretch that player. You double the years, which is two, and then add it another one, so that'd be three. So you balance a $5 million cap hit over 3 years, you know, that's, you know, about $1.6 million. And, you know, you can see that that's a nice, clever way to get that off of your cap. So, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, I think the one name that everyone's kind of mentioned as a candidate is Steve Nash, you know, partly because of his poor play and also because the Lakers look to be coming into a lot of cap room in the following season, in the 2014 season. So they might want to you know, eliminate his $10 million cap hit next year to enable them to chase a middle price free agent.
Yeah, so, but we should clarify, you are waiving that player when you do that. It is going to be interesting to see what happens with that first provision. From what I understand, you can do it as often as possible, as you want, but then for years you have no player, you know, tied to this whatever amount of hit you're taking. So teams have to be kind of clever about the way they're using it. Okay, so let's just name the teams. Let's talk about the teams that are going to have the cap space comparable to the Jazz. You mentioned a couple already. Atlanta's going to have, from my estimation, about $29 million under the cap. The Jazz have somewhere around, I guess, 28, you're saying. Cleveland at 26, and Detroit at 22. And then some other teams can maybe clear, you know, 10 to 15 million. But for basically, for the most part, those are your teams. Is there anyone I'm definitely missing?
No, I think those are the top four, and I should mention that, you know, when we calculated the cap room, we estimated on a $60 million salary cap. That number's not set. We won't know that number until mid-July. So, you know, those numbers are all relative,
right,
of course. But that's where we're at. I think you do have a second group. You know, I have Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, New Orleans, Portland, Phoenix, you know, some of those teams that have, you know, where we project to have, you know, around 13 to 15 million, 17 million maybe for Dallas. You know, a lot of those teams, you know, some of those teams have used the amnesty, so they can't use that, and some of them haven't. So some of those teams could actually get more cap room or create more cap room, you know, by using some of the other provisions. And of course, you know, any of those guys could dump it. But I think the key around the $15 million is, you know, a max contract for a guy coming off a rookie deal is about $15 million. So your guys like Brandon Jennings and Jeff Teague and some of these players that are eligible for extensions, a restricted free agency this summer, those are the guys that you could get about a $15 million starting salary. So those teams, you know, you got about 10 teams that are close to being able to have max money, at least for a younger player, and that are really close to being able to get a max contract for a 6 to 9 year veteran, you know, with a few salary dumps or small trades.
How many max contracts do you think are going to be given out this offseason?
Well, let's think about it. We got Chris Paul.
Yeah, guaranteed.
I still think Dwight Howard. I think Dwight Howard's going to get one.
I do.
And I think that's the end of the list.
Yeah,
I think I guess Josh Smith is probably going to be the third highest paid.
Yeah, so his max, he's been in the league quite a while, so he's kind of up there with Dwight Howard. I think his with Atlanta, I want to say he would start somewhere at like $18 million or average $18 million over the course. I don't think Josh Smith is going to get max money. One thing I'm really interested to see what kind of contracts are given out this summer. One thing the CBA may have done, I think there's two things that are going on here, and I wondered what your thoughts were on this, is that I just think there weren't really tons of exorbitant contracts handed out last offseason. There wasn't anything other than maybe Jeff Green that really made you raise your eyebrows, whereas I feel like years previous, there were at least like two or three really crazy contracts. One, I think owners are just going to wise up a little bit, and I think the CBA is going to help just because of the punitive luxury tax, and they're going to get a little bit more shy in handing out big contracts. Obviously, the new CBA cut the length of contracts by 1 to 2 years, depending on who you're offering it to. I think we're going to see shorter contracts and smaller contracts. And then the other thing that's going on is that really smart GMs are being hired. So you've got the new GM in Phoenix is raised in Boston, is a really big numbers guy. The new GM in Philadelphia, Hinkie, is a student of Daryl Morey in Houston as an assistant GM. He's going to be smart. And so you've got these guys that aren't going to spend money as GMs, they're going to find better deals, I think. And so I'm really intrigued to see what kind of contracts get offered this summer. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you raise good points, and I agree that the shorter contracts are going to be in vogue. Part of that is mandated. I mean, now, you know, for the most part, four-year deals are the longest you're going to see anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within our generation, you know, in the 90s, I mean, they were handing out seven-year contracts. I think Chris Webber, didn't he get like a 12-year contract at one point?
Yeah, I think Kevin Garnett signed like an 8-year, $118 million or whatever, something crazy, $158, I can't remember, some crazy contract.
Yeah, so within the last three revisions of the CBA, I mean, one of the main things that the owners have done is try to limit the number of years on a contract in order to prevent, you know, the kind of guaranteed money that gets put on players and then not the reward. So just by the very nature, the four-year deals are kind of the most you're seeing. But then, you know, if you're going to have a four-year deal, you know, it's easier to stagger your deals. And I think most of the, like you were saying, most of the GMs are smart now, and they do time their cap situations to where they can maximize the benefit by having a lot of contracts expire all at once. So I think one thing I notice as you're kind of looking around the league, you know, there's teams that, you know, this year have four or five teams that we pointed out that have a lot of cap room. And then next year there's going to be another wave of another four or five teams, which all of a sudden have a lot of cap room. And so because of that, I think you'll see the situation where, you know, teams will say, okay, in 2016, 2017, my cap's going to be pretty clean. You know, I can only, you know, add a player under this many years on his contract because I don't want to add, you know, an extra $3 million onto this mid-level player because it will just, you know, potentially hinder my cap situation that year. So yeah, no, but you raise good points. I think another situation is that the league has just kind of been filling out the new CBA. You know, I think as teams were preparing for that situation, they weren't getting in as bad a situation, but then they wanted to have their caps clean as they got to this point where the heightened luxury tax would kick in. And so, I mean, when we looked at it, I think we only found, you know, four or five teams that are going to have substantial luxury tax payments, and I think that's on purpose. Teams have kept their caps clean headed into this summer, so they still have some room to maneuver below that luxury tax line.
All right, let's talk about some of those teams. So who are some teams that are going to be in financial trouble in the next 2 to 3 seasons?
Well, I think the biggest name out there is the Lakers. you know, I think we estimated their salaries if they re-signed Dwight Howard. You know, this is before Kobe Bryant got injured, and the question of him being amnestied was considered. But I think they're over $100 million in salaries, which puts them about $30 million over the luxury tax line. And I think the calculation on the luxury tax that I did was $82 million in luxury tax penalties. Mm-hmm. And that's just by simply signing Dwight Howard, you know, not trading Gasol, not stretching or getting rid of Steve Nash. So they're in the worst situation. The one thing with them, though, is Gasol and Bryant combined for about $50 million this coming year, and they both expire next year. So whether their 2013-14 situation is pretty bad, they don't really have a long-term problem.
Right.
And you know, I tend to be tend to think that they can use their revenues from this year to kind of cover, you know, the big tax bill and kind of keep competitive, and then, you know, kind of have a clean sway, knowing that next year they're probably not going to be in that situation. So I don't know if you agree with that. I know there's a thought amongst Jazz fans that Gasol might be available to us for free if we want him, but I'm not seeing that.
No, I don't think they'll give him away for free, but I do think that they'll look into trading him. If they can give away his contract for some picks or a young, good player to a team that needs a quote-unquote star, I could see. I mean, that would obviously cut his money plus the luxury tax, the extra dollar. So, they could clear up to, by my estimate, you know, something like $45 million just by trading Gasol, somewhere around that ballpark, because he's making, what, $18 million or $17 million, $19 million maybe. I don't know if the Jazz will do that. It's, you could certainly debate it.
Yeah, I think it's,
how much is the contract? Is that $19 million?
Yeah, $19 million. And I think you're right. I think, you know, if they could find a situation where they could shed some salary and find someone that fits D'Antoni's system a little better, maybe a stretch four.
Stretch four.
You know, right. you know, someone like that made half the money, I think they would do that. I mean, if it was possible that the Jazz could trade them Paul Millsap and, you know, we signed him to a $10 million a year deal, I think they'd consider that. However, with the caveat that, you know, they don't want to add too much money onto next summer's salary cap situation because they have pipe dreams for LeBron James. So,
right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they try to, just to let you know, they can, because Kobe's huge $30 million contract falls off after next season. They will have potentially some money to maybe try to put a Bryant Howard LeBron team or something like that together, is what Peter's referring to. So, so Pau Gasol actually becomes the first kind of player we could talk about as a casualty of this big money trading. The other team that actually has more money on the books next year is the New Jersey Nets at $87 million. And I think they're actually probably arguably in a little more dire straits. With $21 million to Joe Johnson, $18 to Darren Williams, Brooke Lopez, $15 million, Chris Humphries, $12 million, Gerald Wallace, $10 million. I mean, that team's just been a disaster, run completely crazy. But at the same time, I don't see that team and see anything that they can give away that would make the Jazz interested, even if they did want to shed money, besides the fact that they have a billionaire owner that I don't think cares about that tax bill whatsoever. Who else is on that list besides the Nets and the Lakers?
Yeah, just want to clarify, it's the Brooklyn Nets now.
Sorry, I call them New Jersey. That's embarrassing.
It's been a calendar year. We should be past that.
I know. I'm even looking at their name, Brooklyn, but I can't get it off my mind.
No, it's all right. Now, Brooklyn definitely has a bad situation, but, you know, like you said, with their owner, and I can't remember. It was explained at one point in something I read that, you know, he makes enough money off of interest to cover his luxury tax bill in like 2 days or something, you know. It's something ridiculous where he just doesn't care about the money. But, you know, the other team that could look to do something, which is right under Brooklyn, is Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I have them at $86 million in committed salaries for next year. Before adding players, they're probably not in a situation where they feel they need to add players, other than they, you know, some of their role players are getting a little bit older. You know, guys like Rashad Lewis had minimal effect this year, and he's probably has an empty roster spot. But they do have an interesting situation. They have, you know, almost $60 million tied up in their core three, and then they have a bunch of mid-level players,
mm-hmm.
Mike Miller, Udonis Haslam. Mario Chalmers, Joel Anthony. So I don't know what you think, but I think there's a situation where the Jazz could acquire one of these guys using their cap room, with the nugget being that the Heat are also in possession of a first-round or a future first-round draft pick from the Philadelphia 76ers in the trade they made during the last draft. So I personally have looked at that pick thinking that it could potentially be a, you know, at least a mid-round lottery pick. You know, I think Philadelphia is at, what, 11 or 12 this year, 11. So I wonder, do you think the Jazz would consider taking one of those guys, one of those contracts on if we got a first-round pick out of that?
Well, that's really the important thing here is, okay, so you take Miami, for instance. They've got really some pretty good players, but they aren't going to give away Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade or LeBron James. There's so many things, other options they could do to cut money. For one, they have an amnesty provision still to use that they could use on, you know, a $7 million contract like Mike Miller. But that's what the Jazz are going to be able to do. Other than maybe Pau Gasol, there aren't just talented guys. If you look at Brooklyn's roster, you know, you're not excited about picking up Gerald Wallace's crappy contract or something like that. But what they can do is they can charge people a fee, like you mentioned, first-round picks. And I think that's exactly what they have to do. Now, they have to be really careful about the types of contracts they take on because, you know, that'd be pretty close to just having a roster full of really bad, expensive players. So they can probably only do that once, maybe twice. But yeah, I think that would definitely, especially a 2014 potentially mid-round to lottery pick would definitely be worth taking or looking into taking a contract like Udonis Haslem, especially if they thought they could maybe offer a little bit more. But yeah, those are the types of moves the Jazz are going to make. They're going to be able to possibly take on money, like you said. But at the same time, those good teams, you know, a team like New York Knicks or Brooklyn or Miami, their picks that they would potentially give away wouldn't be very good because they're good teams, with the exception of the Miami having Philadelphia's pick, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and you know, it's an amazing how much they could actually save. If they're at $86 million in committed salary, you know, and say they traded us Mike Miller, he's owed $6 million next year, and I think he has an option for another $6 million after that. You know, that right there gets him down to $80 million, and then they have, you know, say Udonis Haslem, say they tire of him or think they can replace him with a minimum salary veteran, that's another $4 million. So all of a sudden they just cut $10 million off their $86 million. They're at $73 million, and if the luxury – or I'm sorry, $76 million – and the luxury tax is probably around $73-74 million. So they're just a million or so over. So they're actually, I mean, that's not a bad financial situation considering they're likely to have a championship this year. They had one the year before, and, you know, getting rid of those two players that aren't that crucial to their success, you know, they can still compete going forward. So that's Miami. That's three. The other three teams that I think we calculated to be in the luxury tax to much smaller extent is New York, Boston, and Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Chicago's an interesting team because historically their owner's been fairly cheap. Do any of those players on the Bulls roster that they could possibly give away interest you?
You know, the probably the player I'd want most on a rebuilding team would be you know, Taj Gibson, and I know there's some people that think that he got a little bit too much. He just signed an extension this offseason. I think it averages about $8 million a year over the next 4 years. $8 million a year. So, but, you know, they just re-signed him. I don't think they're going to be giving him away. You know, so then you got to look at, well, who would they want to trade? You know, they're not getting rid of Rose. There's some thought that they'd want to get Boozer, but there's, you know, absolutely no way that the Jazz are going to acquire him. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they'll amnesty him myself, but there's a thought that they might. And then you have Luol Deng has another year. You know, I think he's coming back. Noah's not going anywhere. But then you have, you know, the next guy on the list would be Kirk Heinrich. He's owed $4 million next year. And I think that's an interesting situation. You know, I think you can probably replace him, or the Bulls can replace him, knowing Rose is going to be healthy next year. They can probably replace him as their bench guy. But, you know, if the Jazz can't find a point guard this offseason. Heinrich is a decent placeholder. He's a veteran. You know, he's been known to try on defense, and you know, I think that could be an interesting situation. Do you think would you be willing to acquire that $4 million or spend $4 million of Gail Mueller's money that way?
Oh, absolutely. I think those are the smart moves that Dennis Lindsay's going to have to consider. I don't like Dang at his price tag and at his production. I think he's a decent defender who's a very pretty poor offensive player that people don't realize how poor he is offensively. A lot of long-range two-point long-range jumpers. But yeah, I think guys like Luke Ridnour, if the Wolves decide to pay Pekovic, or Kirk Heinrich would be two really interesting pickups just for reasonable contracts to step in and provide either some backup or spot starting stuff at the point guard. Kirk Heinrich's really interesting because the Bulls have to know how valuable he is, especially with Derrick Rose gone. He was really valuable to their team. You saw that a little bit in the playoffs, just how much they missed his on-ball defense and things of that nature. But yeah, they're definitely a team to look at, because I do think that the luxury tax matters to them. Their owner has made some interesting financial decisions in the past that show that he really is pretty concerned with that amount of money. So, yeah, well, those are definitely teams to look at. Go ahead.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, you got a question, I guess, how are they going to construct their team? They can look at their team now and say, well, you know, Derrick Rose comes back. Are we a title contender, or do we need a salary now to acquire in pieces that would make us a title contender? So, I mean, you look at Dang and, you know, him being out in the playoffs and what they got out of Jimmy Butler at.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler's awesome. $800,000 a year.
I know he's at $1.1 million next year. So, you know, with that type of salary, you know, and Dang's making $13 million more, I wonder if they would, you know, dump him for a season. You know, I know you're not a big fan. I think I'd take him for a year, and then maybe hope that as his contract expires, that maybe he'd re-sign to something more reasonable the season after that, or not, but. But that's Chicago. So I think we've covered all the teams that are in the tax. I mean, that's a total of six teams, with three, or at least the bottom two, Chicago and Boston, just barely being over the luxury tax line. There's a host of teams, though, that are right under the tax that do have some situations that they're going to play out this summer.
Toronto's another team to look at that might be in some trouble, actually.
Yeah, Toronto's at $72 million. I got Golden State at $72.9 million, and I can't remember. I think I counted Jarrett Jack coming back and Carl Landry coming back, but those guys can both actually opt out and look for more money. And then you got Denver's at $70 million, and Minnesota I have at $67 million. That's, you know, with only a partial placeholder for. Pekovic. So I think those three teams actually are really interesting, just because they do have some talented players. You know, I'm real interested in the Iguodala situation in Denver, because if he opts out and he's said he's going to opt out and become a free agent, I got to question whether or not they'd want to pay him, you know, a large salary when they have some other small forwards on their roster, which I think can give them most of what they're getting. You know, with Wilson Chandler, you know, Gallinari's probably going to be hurt for the bulk of the next season, but he plays a lot at small forward. You know, I think Corey Brewer actually gave him some pretty solid minutes last year. So is Iguodala a guy that you think the Jazz might show interest in, and would he have interest in the Jazz, I guess?
I do, and I find him as an interesting person. I would like him. He has his offensive limitations, but he's probably one of the top two perimeter defenders, and I think he's another veteran guy. I think he, at least for the regular season, added kind of a nice toughness to that team. I'm really interested to see if he does opt out, like what kind of deal he's going to get, because people have talked about, you know, he's making $16 million in that year, but you know, I don't think any team's going to pay him a 4-year $16 million a year deal, but you know, will it be 10 or 12? And so it's going to be interesting. And Denver's probably going to get first shot at him if he does, you know, take a little bit of a yearly cut to make long-term money. But I would certainly consider him, you know, I like Iguodala. I'll put it that way. But it gets tricky with the money because, you know, we obviously have to balance some contracts. But he would certainly fit.
Yeah, and when I look at it, I go, you know, last year we got Karolinko got a 2-year, $10 million per year deal. You had Gerald Wallace got 4 years and $40 million. Jeff Green, you mentioned, already got, I think, close to $40 million over 4 years. So those three small forwards, and all of them considered kind of defensive players, none of them high efficiency scorers. I think Iguodala is better than all three of those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I got to think that he's not getting less than 4 years and $40 million. And at that dollar amount, I think Denver would probably consider it a bargain. But, you know, so at what point or what amount of money is he going to say, I'll take that to come to a rebuilding Jazz franchise? And right. I think, you know, it's not $16 million a year, but it's not that far off. You know, maybe it's $14 million. Or $13 million, you know, maybe we structure something where we pay him a little bit more and have his contract decline ever so slightly each year to kind of save some money in the future. But you know, I do think it's a situation where he could get close to $60 million from the Jazz, or $50 to $60 million. And you know, personally, if there's one guy we're going to spend it on, I think he's the kind of player that might fit a rebuilding franchise, in that, you know, I think he'd let our young guys be able to develop, but also he'd bring, you know, toughness and defensive intensity and, you know, some versatility. I mean, what he did on Team USA last summer was pretty amazing. He was playing center a lot of the time. So it's interesting. You know, and then I think we probably should talk about Golden State, just because I know, you know, they have Jarrett Jack and Carl Landry. You know, they're probably going to lose one of those guys. Would you have interest in either one of those guys?
Yeah, I do. I have interest in Carl Landry. We've talked about this. They have bird rights to Jack because they traded for him, correct? He's the one they have bird rights to? Or is it Landry?
Yeah, so if Jack opts out, they could sign him to, you know, basically an unlimited amount, up to the maximum amount. Obviously, he's not going to get that. But they could sign him to a number that would work. Landry, they're going to be right up against the luxury tax amount, the taxpayer amount. If they time it right, they can get him for the non-taxpayer minimum, but that would hard cap them at the apron amount. So it'd be difficult for them in any event to sign him, even for a $5 million per year contract.
He is the guy to look at, because I do think they're going to have a hard time signing him up to that money, and I think it would probably be worth it to pay him a little bit more, maybe a 2 or 3 or $6 million. I like Carl Andrews, a third big. I've mentioned that on this podcast before, but I if I had to put money on it, I think Golden State loses Landry and keeps Jack because of the reasons.
Yeah, so about. I mean, I'm looking at it. He has $4 million. I guess my question, though, is if you're going to pay Carl Landry, you know, $6 million per year, mm-hmm. for 2 or 3 years, so you're looking at, you know, $18 million, you know, something like that, would you not just want to play Paul Millsap, you know, a couple $1 million more per year and bring him back instead?
Well, you know, I'm a huge Paul Millsap fan, so I'm going to say, yeah, probably. The two differences being, besides the money, I think Paul Millsap's a much better player than Carl Landry, a little bit better player. But Carl Landry's also obviously fine with the backup role. He's been a starter, but he's been a backup most of his career, so you have that issue. He might just fit a little bit better if Jazz do decide to go young and start Derek Favors and Enes Kanter. So, but you know, I'm a big Paul Millsap fan. So if they can get Paul Millsap to come in for a 3-year, $8 or $9 million a year, I'm completely fine with that. But the interesting thing about Golden State, and I think we've been pretty keen on this, is as I mentioned in my podcast, they actually made a transaction right before the trade deadline last year to get under the luxury tax, so that, in my belief, that they could willingly pay the luxury tax this year without getting the double whammy hit. And then after next year, they'll lose $18 million in Richard Jefferson and Andres Biedrin's worthless production, and I think they'll be fine. So long term, I think Golden State's going to be fine.
And then they lose $15 million from Bogut. Though, I, you know, even if they want him back, he's not going to make that. He might make closer to $10 million, but you know, that's a big chunk of salary to clear up. So if they can grin and bear it for 1 year, and you know, I think right now with their situation with their owner and you know what he went through being booed after the Monte Ellis trade, and then you know coming back and you know getting to the second round of the playoffs, I think they got a lot of goodwill built up that they're not going to let
go just by avoiding the luxury tax for 1 year. So, you know, one thing we haven't talked about yet, which maybe we can transition into real quick if we have some time, is, you know, with all the teams that have cap room, you know, who do you think is going to be chasing some of our free agents, and maybe is their ability to do some sign and trades to benefit the Jazz that way?
Yeah, so that's interesting. Basically, from what I understand, we can't do any sign and trades with teams that are already over the luxury tax, correct?
It's actually the apron amount, which is the luxury tax plus $4 million. Has to be that. So, and it would have to be after the trade to be over that amount. So like the Lakers are already way over that amount. There's, you know, virtually nothing they could do short of amnestying Kobe Bryant to be able to get. And even then, you know, they're not going to be able to keep below that approximately $77 million amount. So the Lakers would be out of it. Brooklyn would be out of it. Miami's, you know, they're just, all of those teams are in a situation where it's going to be nearly impossible. New York would be extremely difficult to pull off. But then you got teams, anyone lower than that, we could probably work out as long as we match salary fairly well. We took back a little bit more maybe than what we were giving, but any of the other teams other than that, we'd be able to do it. So I think we've crossed about five names for sure off the list, but it does limit us.
Well, there are a couple people that I would be willing to think about. It's a good question. So Philadelphia is going to be an interesting team just based on what happens with Andrew Bynum this offseason. If they lose Andrew Bynum or decide not to re-sign him, I think they become a big player and have most of the money to pay Al Jefferson a fair contract. And then they might have a couple of big men that we could take back in a sign and trade to be our third big if we were looking for them. You know, maybe a Spencer Haas. Not a great player, but maybe a nice third big at a reasonable rate. And maybe along with a pick if they really valued Al Jefferson. The other team that I really like is Toronto. And I don't know what their future is, and they've got a lot of money on the books. But if we could somehow grab an Amir Johnson from Toronto in a sign and trade for Al Jefferson. Like, if they were going to get rid of Al Bargnani, Jefferson wouldn't be a horrible player for them to pair to try to make the playoffs with their young guy, Jonas Valanciunas. But I love Amir Johnson if they could figure out a way. But also, I know Toronto values those players, and they aren't just going to give away good players for free. I know a lot of people were talking about maybe an Eric Gordon for Al Jefferson sign and trade with the Pelicans. I'm not very interested in that. I'm not a huge Eric Gordon fan. I think he really hurt their team. Obviously, I mean, they're trying to give him away. It's pretty obvious at this point that he's not in their future. And, you know, which begs the question, what do you do when a player signs another contract and tells the media how much they don't want to come back? And you just assume if you make them come back off restricted that it'll work out. But I think that totally ended up biting the Pelicans in the tail feathers.
That's right. Well, and, you know, it's kind of funny because you hear a lot of teams say, well, you know, you draft a rookie, you have their rights for their first 4 years, and then they're restricted free agents, so you pretty much control them for the first 8 years of their career, which to some extent is true. But then on the other hand, you know, look what happened with Eric Gordon. You didn't offer him as much money as they could have. Instead, they made him go out and get a contract from another team. He went to Phoenix. I'm sure they told him all about how they're going to make his knee right and he'll never feel pain again while he plays basketball. And he was convinced that his heart was in Phoenix and that's where he wanted to be. So, yes, you know, they had the right to match that and bring him back, but, you know, the relationship was soured at that point. And, you know, it's a difficult situation. The Jazz are staring that down the gun with Hayward and Favors both up for contract extensions this year. If they don't sign anything by October, then they both can start, you know, selling themselves on the market next year. And I have to believe that, you know, a team will you know, get into either of their ear. I mean, say Derek Favors takes a trip to Charlotte, you know, is told by Michael Jordan that he's their face of their franchise and that they want them, and, you know, that he needs to go out and tell the media that he doesn't want the Jazz to match their contract. And, you know, all of a sudden you have a bad situation where, yes, we control them, but do we want to? So as far as the trade, you know, the rumors of the trade for Eric Gordon, his contract at $45 million left on it. He has the knees. But, you know, when I'm looking at that situation, I look at, New Orleans cap situation, and they could sign Jefferson outright, so they would have little incentive to trade him, to do a sign and trade to us if they believe they want Jefferson. You know, why not sign him outright and then find someone else to trade Gordon to for other pieces?
For other pieces, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Phoenix might still be interested. They have the new GM, so maybe they're not. But, you know, there's someone out there willing to take the risk that Gordon can be a 20-point scorer in the league again. I mean, he's done it before, and, you know, maybe with a new situation, he'll be happy, and that's all it's going to take. Who knows? So, you know, when I'm looking at the list as far as the guys, the teams chasing us, I think you hit Philadelphia on the head for Jefferson. But a lot of these teams are, you know, within a move or two of making enough cap room where they don't need to actually trade for them. They can just sign any of our guys outright. You know, some of the situations in the middle, you know, I look at San Antonio and wonder, and I'm not necessarily saying they want Jefferson. I don't buy that rumor started last year was legit, but you know, they actually might, I think, be interested in Millsap to pair next to Duncan, and they might even be interested in Mo Williams, you know, at a discount. And there might be some players off their roster that we might be able to want, or you know, they might not be able to feel they can keep. Splinter being one of them that I'd be interested in. Another good match that I've seen is I think Indiana, you know, they played really well. They probably want to bring David West back, but they probably have the ability to bring Millsap in as well. And I think that would be a long-term upgrade for them. And they also have Danny Granger that they might want to trade for a year. Would you be interested in acquiring his contract for maybe a Millsap?
Not really. No, not a big Danny Granger fan. Sorry. I'm over. I mean, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who's listening to the podcast, but I'm really over high volume, average to below average efficient players. I just don't want them on this team. I'd rather roll out the dice with young guys and spot veterans that can, and just kind of see what we have. And I think, you know, that let's talk a little bit about, let's transition actually into the Jazz financial. What's going to happen this offseason for the Jazz financially after all these things we've talked about tonight?
Well, you know, you look at it and you got to look at, well, you know, they have all this cap room. Who's available as free agents? You know, I think we've hit the top of the heap that we're not going to be considered in. I think maybe the best player that we could possibly sign would be Iguodala, if we threw out a ton of money, which I don't think is likely. And then after that, you got to look at, well, who else would be interested? You know, I think Jose Calderon is a name a lot of Jazz fans want. I would love him, but personally, I don't see Calderon wanting to come to a rebuilding team at this stage of his career. I could see a much better match for him in Dallas. You know, to potentially, if they were able to, you know, lure a big player that he could sign there for cheap, or another team for a discount to compete. So you got the mid-level guys, but then, you know, you start getting past Calderon and some of these guys, and you're talking about $5 to $8 million per year contracts in that range for some of these mid-tier guys. And, you know, the Jazz could spend, you know, $5 to $8 million on four players, and tie up all their cap room in those guys, but probably not get that much more value than if they just rolled out with the guys they have and signed some lesser veterans. So it is interesting, you know, looking at the history of all these guys that have cleared the salary cap room, the one that has always stuck out in my head is the year that the Chicago Bulls did it, and then they ended up signing Ron Mercer and, you know, a bunch of these guys that just couldn't do anything. And they got stuck in the lottery for a long time just because they tied up their financial situation. Detroit's probably another good example of that with Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva, and some of those guys were kind of the mid-tier free agents that they brought in. So I kind of think the Jazz are going to avoid that and go bare bones. Do you disagree?
No, I actually think, and I think that's just a really important thing for Jazz fans to think about and consider. Now, the interesting thing is, just looking at the history of the Jazz in this position, in 2003 they offered a contract basically to anybody who would listen, tried to sign big names, Brad Miller, Jason Terry, Corey Maggette, just pursued some decently big free agents on the market, struck out, and then went into that year with just a really basically a low talent with a few veterans and mid-level guys for really cheap contracts and kind of took their lumps. But the next year, they kind of targeted some second-tier guys like Mehmet Okur and Carlos Boozer and signed them to really huge contracts at the time that raised some eyebrows. So those are basically your two options. Like you said, you can't get the big guys, but maybe you can get some of the second-tier guys if you want to go for it. But then the other option is just to kind of sit on that money, which I think will have to happen naturally, just because if there's one thing I think the Jazz are going to – one thing they're not going to do this summer is overpay for anything, I feel. I feel like Dennis Lindsay said that over and over. He talks about value propositions and basically market value, and I just don't think he's going to give out a contract. He's not going to give a $10 million a year contract to a $6 million player like a Ben Gordon or Charlie Villanueva. And that includes our own guys. We haven't even talked about Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward, but I don't think they're going to overpay for them, and they're not going to overpay for people. So I think that's naturally going to lead to a really cheap and possibly, young team with some cheap veterans that want to come here for a couple of years, maybe to get a starting job or to kind of showcase themselves to the rest of the league. I would put money on that happening.
Yeah, no, and it just seems like the most likely scenario. And if you go back and look at those seniors you mentioned, and I know you did some good write-ups on those, I think that the McGetty and Jason Terry year, I think that was actually a really deep free agent class. McGetty and Terry were toward the back of that class. They didn't sign right out of the gate. They kind of had to wait for the market to come to them a little bit. Both being restricted free agents, they didn't really hold all their cards, and so you saw them match it. And then you saw the following year, was actually a very limited market, but there's virtually no teams out there that had salary cap space. I mean, there was the Nuggets were the other big player, and the Jazz, there was two power forwards. The Jazz needed a power forward. Kenyon Martin was there, and then Carlos Boozer sprung free, and we both got those options. But in another year, in a free agent class similar to this year, where you do have, as we mentioned, there's 10 teams that have maybe $15 million or more cap room. Is Utah on the top of any of those guys' lists? And it's just frankly, it's not, especially not in a year where we're going to be rebuilding. If teams didn't looked at us and said we were third or fourth seed in the West and we're just one piece away, then maybe we get one of those guys. But it just doesn't seem likely right now. So it does look like the final instance where we go to the rebuild. And another point that the Jazz brass have been making is they keep saying that we've skipped a step in the rebuilding process. And I keep looking at it, and it's like, looks more and more like the step that we skipped is the step that we're entering in next year. So to me, it looks like we just delayed the initial step in the rebuilding process for 2 years. But I think that's where we're at. We're at the clear out the cap and slowly build back up.
Yeah. So we can let's recap everything we've talked about here and bring it home to the Jazz, because we probably should have put that up front, because that's what our listeners care about, is the Utah Jazz. But you're absolutely right. So out of those five or six teams with 20 million plus, I think the Jazz are probably in fifth or sixth place as far as like wonderful destinations for free agents. Free agents would probably rather go to Atlanta. Maybe Cleveland is arguable, and Detroit, but even those teams, it is hard to get free agents here. I don't any Jazz fan that tells himself that it's not is delusional. But so I think naturally, and like you said, I think there are a lot of hints that we are going to preserve our cap space to try to take either good players or picks or crappy contracts with picks or things of that nature over the next couple of years. And then also importantly, to see what we have with the young guys. So I'm actually really excited. I feel like the financial landscape has actually kind of forced the Jazz's hand into doing that next year. And I think a lot of fans, and the fun thing is we get to see what the fans are made of, because the fans have been clamoring for this. They want to see the young guys play. And I think we might get that. And, we'll have to see if we can stick through the kind of rebuilding process. But I'm actually really excited for the next season or two, because I think we are going to see the young guys play. I think we're going to make some trades that will get us some interesting assets. I love draft picks. If I were a GM, I'd just want draft picks, because I love the draft, I love evaluating, and I love cheap talent, that whole process. And so, you know, we may pick up some smaller players like a Kirk Heinrich or Luke Ridnour, but I'd be really surprised if we offered any contract longer than about 3 years, $6 million this summer. Do you disagree?
No, I think you're right. And, you know, and you've done analysis of this before. I mean, really, you got to time it with the extensions that we're giving our young guys. You know, and you know, Favors and Hayward would kick in the following summer, and then Cantor and Burks, if he earns one, would kick in, you know, 2 years after that. So if we want to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a position where we're going to have to lose somebody, then, you know, really, you know, you're looking at 2 year contracts this summer. You know, maybe through third year if you felt like the contract is low enough and your other situation isn't that bad. But, you know, we do have an advantage. We do have, you know, two rookie contracts coming in, or likely to, unless we somehow package those and move up. So, you know, we'll be in a good situation. And, you know, one thing we probably should mention real quick is the salary cap. You know, I know everyone talks about the minimum, and you mentioned this in your downbeat on Monday. You know, that minimum is... the penalty for hitting the minimum is just paying your current guys more money, and there's a big advantage in hanging on to salary cap space through the year. You saw Cleveland this year was able to get a first-round pick out of Memphis simply by taking on Murray Spates, and you know, he was only owed $4 million last year, and he can opt out this summer. So if the Jazz are below the salary cap through the year, you know, we can actually look at those kind of trades up to the trade deadline, and you know, the salary cap or your minimum salary is calculated at the end of the year based on the total salaries that you've paid, you know, whether they're prorated for players that might have spent partial years. So this could be a good year to go in, you know, to the season with $50 million on payroll. You know, the other advantage to that is if your payroll is only $50 million, then you don't need 19,000 fans to come out every week. So, you know, the fans would be tested, but at the same time, you can race for the hit on a business side because you don't have large salaries, where the last few years, the Jazz might not have been able to do that because they've been, you know, fairly close to the luxury tax line. And with that amount of salaries, they still needed to sell tickets. So,
yeah, and on top of that, Cleveland did it 2 years ago where they took Baron Davis's contract and the Clippers' unprotected first-round pick, which became Kyrie Irving. In 2003, the Jazz also did a similar thing by taking on Tom Gugliotta's $8 million and a pick, which led to Gordon Hayward like 25 years later. So, yeah, I agree with you. We're going to keep our contracts low and go and just see what we can acquire, what kind of assets we can by the end of the year. All right, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Peter didn't know I was going to do this, but we're going to take the last 3 minutes of our podcast. We're going to make crazy wild predictions. Peter, I want to hear, as of right now, if you had to put money on it, who are the players the Jazz are going to walk away from at this upcoming draft?
Who are we going to draft?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I do think there's a good chance. I think there's a good chance we get Olynyk with one of our picks. And, you know, I know a lot of people want to compare him to Memo Okur right now, saying he's kind of a stretch five because he's a seven-footer. I don't think he's completely that. I think he's got a mid-range game that's pretty strong. His three-point game's okay, but you know, being up here in Spokane, I've seen him play a handful of times. He actually has a lot of low-post moves, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Jazz take him just because of the way he complements our other two big guys. And it would solve our three-man rotation. And frankly, and I've told you this before, the strength of this draft is seven-footers. You know, not all-star seven-footers, but serviceable seven-footers. So I really do think we could see the Jazz coming out of this draft with a seven-footer, and he kind of is the one guy that I think complements the two guys we already have in those positions. So that's who I'd say at 21, or at 14 is someone like Olynyk. 21, I know a lot of people think Schrader's going to move up higher, but I think that's where you would look at taking him, maybe even keeping him in Europe a year or bringing him over. You know, I'm not big on Larkin or a lot of the other point guards, but I think that you know, Schrader would be the one guy at 21 if he fell that far that I'd want to see. So that's kind of the two guys I have my eyes on. I'm not completely sold on Schrader. I know a lot of his hype is based off of one all-star game where he looked really fast against high school players that were paying about, you know, 75% speed because it was an All-Star game. So I think there's some concern there, but that's who I got. What do you think about that, and do you have someone different?
Well, I actually think if I just had to put money on it, I just have a gut feeling we're going to take Schroeder at 14. We've fallen in love with people that put up huge All-Star stat games at the Nike Hoop Summit before, when Enes Kanter did it. And if I had to put money, 21, I think it's going to be a big guy, like a Gorgui Dieng or a Withy, or maybe Tony Mitchell out of North Texas. So that would be who I think. I just have a weird feeling. I'm kind of hopeful. I'm a big fan of Schroeder. I'm hoping the Jazz find a way to grab him at 14. So that's my Schroeder and a big. Probably Schroeder and Jang, we'll say.
Have you seen a lot of video besides that game?
I found Schroeder. It was embarrassing. It took a long time, but I found about like 6 games on the internet, and I had to pay for one of them in Germany. So you can find it if you look. And it's really hard because his teammates totally are bad. And so it's really hard. And I feel like that's the one thing a couple of people have going for them. In a way, it's Derek Favors syndrome. He just played with the worst teammates ever, and so it was hard to really know what he would be like. You know. And so it's really hard to evaluate. That's the thing I find interesting about evaluations is people will kill a guy, and then you're like, man, he's a point guard, and he doesn't get assists, but he's playing with these guys that like can't finish. And so I find that aspect interesting and underrated. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of the hype that's on him is I think we've fallen in love with his physical stature. He's Rondo's measurements, and so we think, well, maybe he can be Rondo. We see him play in that one game, we see how quick he can be. We can look at his stats, see his three-point shot improve this year, and he was a competent three-point shooter. So that kind of hits, the three things that we're looking at. But, I just have a hard time falling in love with him personally just because I haven't been able to see him play. Like, I've seen some of these other prospects play, and I've fallen out of love with the other point guard prospects because I have seen them play.
Right.
Undoubtedly, the Jazz, with our foreign scouts have seen, enough footage or are able to get tapes, lots of tapes of all his games and make a fair evaluation. I'm a little surprised at the hype that he's gotten and how far he's jumped just because, it's almost like we don't have anyone to be in love with right now, and he's the flavor of the month because the little we have seen has been so good. So that's my concern with him, and,
I think that's definitely fair. But that's my other thing is he's kind of an unknown, which actually might work in our favor. As far as just people, I think we have a pretty good idea of what Shane Larkin's going to be. Mike Kabongo we pretty much have a good handle of what he, at least a range. And I think that's true of every prospect, but Schroeder, I think there's kind of a question mark there. And so in a way, he's a high-risk, high-reward, but I think for my money, I think he has, the second most potential. So I like him. At pick 14, you can gamble on a guy like that. But it'll be interesting. I'm super excited for the draft. I trust the Jazz. I don't know. I feel good about what the Jazz are going to do for some reason this year. I feel good about. I think they'll make the right choice. Okay, I'm going to put up one more. One crazy prediction for just some trade or financial transaction that goes on during the year. What do you got? Anything that comes to mind?
One thing that the Jazz would do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going to like this, but I think looking at Toronto, I think there's a chance that the Jazz would consider trading for Varnani, if Marvin Williams opts into his contract or if he doesn't waive at the final year, then I could see us swapping Varnani for Marvin Williams. Toronto's highly motivated to get out of that contract. I think they could include some cash in that deal. I think the salary, the amount next year is $3.2 million. I think we could see something like that where he's brought in. And, he's a guy that, similar to Olenek, has that, outside game. He's not nearly as efficient as you'd want it to be, but, it'd be a way to have a third big on the roster. His salary isn't that bad. And, 2 years ago, he wasn't that bad of a player, not the best defensive, but he just – and I could see him being a complement to that. And I guess my basis for thinking the Jazz might have interest is if the rumors were true that we were chasing Ryan Anderson last year, I think they want a player like that. And I think that player, Bargnani, is there for free if they want him, basically. So that's my crazy prediction, sure to go wrong.
That's totally crazy. I think Alec Burks gets dealt this year. I think he definitely gets dealt before he's offered a new contract. I think it's going to be this year.
You think it's going to be at the draft, or you think it's going to be during the season?
I think it's going to be more likely at the draft, so I might be very wrong about that. But I just think – I really don't think Alec Burks has a long-term future with this team for a lot of reasons. Yeah, that's what I think. Anyway, it's going to be super interesting. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, we can close after this. You know, the only problem I see with trading Alec Burks is I just don't see there being a lot of trade value for him. So, you know, what are we going to get back? I mean, you know, we've taken an asset, a lower lottery pick. We haven't improved its value by giving him playing time and allowing him to showcase himself. So, yes, there's probably some teams out there that would say, well, yeah, maybe he just needs a change of scenery. We'll give you the 25th pick in the draft. Or we give you 20th pick. I mean, I don't think you're going to, you know, be, you know, for example, I don't think you're packaging number 14 and Alec Burks to get into the top 10. You know, I don't think that's out there. So that's the only reason I think that Burks is likely to be here at least one more season is because I just don't think we're going to get the value. And you know, if you're not going to get something worth the value, his contract's still pretty reasonable. It's only, what is it, $1.5-2 million this year? Mm-hmm. So that being the case, you know, why not see if we do clear the deck and we do give him some playing time, maybe he can improve that value and you know, you still want to move him for other reasons not related to play, and then you can do that maybe in the middle of the season for a future pick that has more value.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. The reason I think that Dallas is right in front of us in the draft, and I think that there is a chance that they might covet a similar player to us. And so we might want to move up just one or two spots, and Alec Burks might be the only thing that we can trade to do that. Anyway, that's my crazy prediction. It's going to be interesting. So we've got the draft coming up at the end of June, and then in July, you know, just a week later, you know, people get to start signing contracts and making verbal agreements. And also, excitingly, the Jazz can start negotiating with Gordon Hayward and Derek Favors. I'm interested to see if they sign extensions this summer before getting to restricted free agency. So those are the things that Jazz fans have to look forward to. And so that's what's on my mind. As always, Peter, I'll give you the last word. Share with us anything you want to.
No, that's it. I think we probably they probably heard too much of us at this point. So
yeah, there's going to be the three guys that are into the financial aspects. All right. Well, that wraps up our podcast. Thanks for listening. Hopefully, this wasn't too boring. We got a little bit far into the salary restrictions and things like that, which I know are only interesting to like 2% of Jazz fans. So we apologize about that. But as always, thanks, Peter, for coming to talk about the financial aspects. We'll probably talk a little bit more and obviously have some reactions to any of the financial maneuvers that the Jazz make. And hopefully this gives you a little bit better idea of kind of things that they're looking at and what Dennis Lindsay is looking at. But thanks for listening, and until next time, we'll see you later.